generosity in that for sure. And one last reminder, next week is the clock's back thing. So that's unfortunate, but if you wanted a heads up that that's coming down the pipe, it is coming. So I'm so glad that you're here. I don't know what you did with your week. I was pretty productive with mine. I started working on my tombstone, actually. Because seriously, I don't want what that bad boy says to be left to chance, right? I don't want to leave it in the hands of the people around me. And so I started working on this thing. But man, you start having nightmares. What are people going to remember about me? If I have this tombstone, what are they going to think? What are they going to do to summarize my life? And so I came up with a couple that I'm a little bit scared might be the case. The first one should pop up here in a minute. I was concerned that people would remember me as the Chicken King, which 2 weeks ago was a terrible joke I made. And I don't want to be remembered for a terrible joke that I made. I thought, but what about my hobbies, maybe? With my hobbies, I'm kind of mediocre at best. I can do a lot of things all right, but I don't really excel at anything. So if I'm remembered for my hobbies, it might be something like this one. Like, he loved hockey, but well, he couldn't take a slap shot. Like, just a quick, you know, reminder that though I was passionate about something, I lacked, you know, a fully orbed skill set in that kind of a thing. I don't want it to be that. And then I thought, well, what if they come up with something kind of nice? Like the start of here is he died the way he lived. And I thought, okay, you know, that'd be good. But then what if they're cheap like me and they're like, well, we got another line. We got to fill it in. What might they put in there? Waiting for a growth spurt, you know? Come on, if it's about me physically, like I'm looking at it thinking, oh no, what are they gonna? So I started working on it because I don't want to leave it in the hands of people that I love because I don't know what they're gonna come up with. And so I started working on it, but it was hard to come up with. And when I look at a tombstone, I realize you've got your name, and you've got a couple of numbers, you got a little hyphen in between them, and then you've maybe got two lines to summarize the hyphen. The hyphen is all we've got. I mean, it's not that much when we think about the important questions like leaving a legacy that people across the world, you know, kind of wonder about and want to do. I've got a hyphen, and so I'm thinking, what do I want to come to mind first? When people look at my life, they sit around in a circle, I guess. I don't know what shape they'll sit in after I die, but they'll sit together, they'll look at each other and say, what do we remember about this? I hope that there's a few things that they all say, oh yeah, that's it. That sums it up. And I would hope that those things would have to do with my love for God and my love for my family and these kind of noble things. But I don't know exactly what's going to happen with that. And if we want to leave a legacy, as we think about these kinds of questions, we've got to figure out, what do I want that hyphen to say? Like, we've got to give some thought to that. What do I want that hyphen to say? And we've got to start living that way. Now, if you're friends with my wife on Facebook, you might know that I made a clock this week. I'm pretty proud of it. Yeah, you saw that clock? Okay, so I made this clock. And the thing is, you know, I think it turned out pretty good. I don't want to be remembered for it, but it turned out pretty good. I mean, the first thing after I hung it, my wife asked is, can you get it out of the way so I can take a picture of it and put it on Facebook? Absolutely. And so we've got this clock, and it's nice, and I built it, and I'm glad that I did. But here's the thing. Was it my idea? Did I have the vision for it? Well, no, not exactly. I mean, looking at this clock, okay, so common sense told us that clocks are helpful to have in the house. Common sense told us that. Pinterest told my wife that gigantic clocks are good to have in the house. So now we know it's a clock and it's gigantic, and then the Rugged Rooster, you know, maybe you know that. It's a little design company. It used to, you know, people who founded it used to go here. They told me distressed wood looks good. So I know it's got to be a clock and it's got to be, you know, gargantuan, and it's got to be distressed. I have those elements, but we didn't see a picture of a clock just like that. I didn't have that. All I knew was that it was going to be a clock, and it was going to be gigantic, and it was going to be distressed. Those were the elements that I had to work with, and so I went down to the garage, and I said, what materials have I got? What tools have I got? How can I bring this to pass? And the thing is, it can be similar when we look at the stories of characters in the Bible and their lives. We don't just look at their lives and just like a cookie cutter say, I'm going to live that way. Because if you did some of the things that characters in the Bible did, well, you might go to prison, for one. You might, you know, be saying things that are really, really, really untrue. I mean, if you, and people sometimes do, start saying that I am the Savior, I am the Christ, I am the Lord, I'm the Messiah. And you don't just imitate exactly what you see in the Bible. But we can certainly look at these stories, and though they're from a vastly different time, vastly different place, we can bring out from them some of those elements of a life that is pleasing to God, a legacy style life that is pleasing to God and is impactful for generations to come. And we can look at these faithful men and women and we can draw these things out of it. And maybe we don't get step-by-step instructions on how to live out our lives, your life, my life, but we certainly can draw on these elements from their lives. It's a clock. It's huge. It's distressed. They trusted God. They lived by conviction. And with our lives and the moments we have and the gifts that we have and the skills that we have, we can pull together that vision of a life worth living. And we're going to look today at a guy like that. And his name was Caleb. And I'm going to tell you right up front, his legacy, the elements of his legacy, a couple of them were that he trusted in God and that he lived by conviction. And I'm going to summarize for you some of his story. So you're free to turn to it if you want, or if you want to make a note, Numbers 13 and 14 is where we find a primary part of Caleb's story. But I'm just going to kind of run through it in a paraphrase sort of way right now, just so you can catch a glimpse of what's going on here, because maybe you're not familiar when I say Caleb with what Caleb's story was. And so basically we had the Israelite people, and maybe you've seen the paintings of the big Red Sea that split, and the Israelites were set free from captivity in Egypt. They were slaves in Egypt. God set them free, and out they went into the wilderness, millions of them. And so they're set free, and they've got a leader named Moses. And God said, you know, slavery, that's not what I want for you. No, no, no. There's a land, a promised land that I'm promising to you that is good that you will take over. That will be your land. That will be the promise of what I give you. And so God said to Moses, after they had escaped from Egypt and they're gathered in the wilderness, God said to Moses, send out some guys to explore the land of Canaan, this land that I am giving to the Israelites. And so it was plain what he had in mind. He said, send some people out to explore the land that I'm giving you. He's not sending them out to explore whether or not it should be the land that is going to be given to them. No, no, no. God's saying, this is it, but I want you to send out some guys ahead of you, some spies, to figure out how you can take the land and what about the land is so wonderful. And one of those men was Caleb. And so Moses sent these people out, there was a dozen of them, and he said, go through the Negev, you know, kind of the region, and then go up into the hill country, and when you're there, here's what I want you to look for. He said, are the people there strong or are they weak? Are the people there, are they few or are they many? Do they live in unwalled cities or are they fortified cities? And about the land, is the soil fertile or is it poor? And are there trees there so that we can build and do trading? And bring back some of the fruits of the land, because it was the beginning of the time when the grapes would have been ripening. And so these people, they went out and they explored the land, and after 40 days, they came back. So these guys had all gone out, Caleb being one of them, and they came back and to Moses and the whole Israelite community in the desert, and they gave an account of what they found. And they said, this land to which you sent us, it's amazing. They use the term, it flows with milk and honey, meaning it's fertile, it's profitable, it's everything that we could need. And they said, here's the fruit of it. And I don't know if they had enough grapes for the millions who were gathered to eat them, but I'm assuming there was some sort of symbolic sort of, you know, somebody tasting and saying, oh my goodness, this fruit that has been brought back so early in the season, this tells us that this land is amazing. But then they went on. And these guys started saying, but there's a problem. The problem is that the people who are there are dangerous. They're powerful. And their cities are fortified, and their cities are huge. And they went on and on, and they said, the people who are there, they're descendants of these great warriors. And they went on and on about how dangerous the people were. And they were so kind of scared, and everybody they were talking to is getting scared. And then Caleb stands up as one of the 12 who had gone out, who had seen what was in the land. And he pretty much just says, like, silence, son. Like, he just silences them and says to Moses, no, 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 this is what we should do. We should go up and take possession of the land because we can do it. But the men who went with him said, no, 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 this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. He said, we can't attack these people. They're stronger than we are. And so they started to spread report through the Israelite community saying the land wasn't actually that good. It wasn't worth the risk of going to take it. The people were huge. I mean, they said in our own eyes, when we stood next to them, we felt like grasshoppers. It's a terrible feeling. Say, we look like grasshoppers. They would think the same about us. That's what we thought in their presence. And they started saying, the land we explored devours those who are living in it. I mean, they put pictures of fear into the minds of the people who were there that we shouldn't go and take this land, even if God said we should take it, because it devours those by whatever, famine, drought. I mean, the land is hostile, and the people are dangerous. And so they spread all these reports, and this pessimism is contagious. And God had said, you can go and take this land, and had miraculously delivered the people from Egypt through a series of amazing events. But then these guys come back and say, no, taking that land is impossible. And everyone in the nation is just rattled by this. And they go, okay, well, now we're stuck here in the desert. We came out of Egypt, and this is what lies before us. What are we going to do? And so all night they were grumbling, the people. They all that night were kind of upset with each other and upset with Moses and Aaron, who were their leaders. And they said, you know, if only we had just died in Egypt, or if only we had just died here in the wilderness. But what good have you done, and what good has God done in leading us out here so that now we can just die by the sword? We can die by the sword, and our wives and our kids will be plunder for the people that we go and try and take this land from. I mean, what good is that? And they started talking. They said, well, maybe we should get a new leader. We should get a leader to take us back to Egypt. And they're so disillusioned by the fear about what lies in front of them that they assume that going back to slavery in Egypt is somehow a good option. Meanwhile, they were beaten and bloodied in that place. They were given unrealistic expectations of work. They hated it there. And they were oppressed there for so long, and yet, because of the fear of the unknown of what lied ahead, they were willing to go back. And so they said, we need a new leader to take us back there. But then Joshua and Caleb, these two guys who went, they stand up and they tear their clothes and they said to the Israelites, they said, the land we passed through, it's exceedingly good. It's so good, they said. And if the Lord is pleased with us, he'll lead us into that land. That land flowing with milk and honey, that land that is promising and fertile, that will provide for us what we need. God will lead us there and give it to us. But don't rebel against God and God's plans. Don't rebel against God's leader that he's put ahead of us. Don't be afraid because of the people that lie ahead of us in the land. We'll devour them. He said, their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. And so don't be afraid of them. And after a conversation went on, God said to Moses, because my servant Caleb has a different spirit and follows me wholeheartedly, I will bring him into the land, and his descendants will inherit it. And so that's what happened as Caleb came back from spying on the land, discovering what was available, coming back and speaking with conviction. And now we fast forward 45 years in his life. Just the blink of an eye, right? 45 years later. And if you want to follow along here, I encourage you to make a note or flip open to Joshua 14. Joshua 14 is where we find that Joshua now is the new leader, effectively having taken over Moses' role as the leader of God's people, going to lead them into the conquest. And Joshua's account of his life has Caleb coming up to him. And it starts in verse 6 and says, now the people of Judah, they approached Joshua and Caleb, and Caleb said, you know what the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, at Kadesh Barnea about you and me. Said, I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to explore the land, and I brought back to him a report according to my convictions. But my fellow Israelites who went with me made the hearts of the people melt in fear. I, however, I followed the Lord my God wholeheartedly. And we can get lost in the names, you know, it's the people of Judah and Joshua, and they were at Gilgal, and Caleb was the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and they were sent from Kadesh Barnea, and think, oh my goodness, how can I follow this? This is so far out of my you know, realm of knowledge and understanding. But even setting aside geography right now, just imagine this picture that Caleb comes up to Joshua, who was the one who they went together, and he said, you know, buddy, you know, old friend, 45 years ago, you know that God told Moses that this land would be mine. That you and I came back and we courageously said that God will give us this land. We should go because God will help us. And he says this with courage and conviction. And this is a part of following the God wholeheartedly, is living by our convictions and what we should do. And the others, they came and they arrived, and they were so scared that they spread lies about the land. They said the land devours the people who are there, regardless of what they'd seen. I mean, they came back at first saying, you know, it is good land. Here's the fruit of it, but the people are scared, and then they started spreading these rumors through the people. The land's really not worth it. It's not worth the risk of going to take it. But after going and checking out the land, Caleb came back, and he didn't just say what Moses wanted to hear. And he didn't say what the itching ears of the crowd wanted to hear. He didn't say what his peers who had gone with him wanted him to say. He spoke the truth of what he believed. He spoke with conviction about what he saw, that phrase. He brought back a report according to his convictions. He brought back a report according to the way it was in his heart. He was living by his convictions, and he didn't look to speak or live this life that was earning him favor in the eyes of people. He willingly spoke against the current, against the norm, because it was right, because he knew it was right. But it's so easy for us sitting here to not live by even the little convictions that we have in our lives, especially when it seems like little things. We can just talk about so-and-so behind their back because they're probably not going to know. I think, for my income, I'll just work a little bit under the table on the side and not claim that on my income tax. It's just a little bit of cash. There's a way for you to claim untaxable income on your income tax. The government knows that you babysit and you make furniture or whatever you do. You can do that, and it's right to be honest and upright in those things. We can maybe declare just the wrong principal operator on our car because it'll save us a little bit of money. And I was really glad that I had the opportunity to live by a conviction a little while ago, because I was driving my van and we got rear-ended. And I get on the phone with ICBC and they say, okay, what happened? And I tell them what happened and they say, okay, well, and why were you driving the car? And I don't remember the story that we gave them when we were in the insurance office. Because the car is mine, but my dad is the one who has it at his place. He drives it most of the time. But it's got a hitch on it, so I wanted to be able to drive it sometimes to haul a trailer. And so I'm thinking, what did we say? What's the story we gave them? The story we gave them was the truth. So we said to the insurance agent, it's my car. We want my dad to drive it most of the time, and I'm going to drive it sometimes. So what does that look like? And they said, well, he's the principal operator, and you've got it once in a while. And so I said, when I was giving the report, well, I just am borrowing it for the weekend while we went to the island, and it's my dad. She said, okay. Oh, it's easy not to get caught living outside your convictions and in that little web of lies that we can do. It's easy to do that, but it's so easy to live. Well, it's not so easy. It's a relief to live within our convictions so that we only have to remember that one story that we told, which was the true one. And it's so common that we come up against these times where we know what's right. We have a conviction about what's right, but it won't get us ahead. And it might cost us. It won't save us money. It won't make us popular. And we face decisions that are at odds with our convictions all the time, in little things and in big things, and especially as followers of Jesus. If you've placed your faith in Jesus, then the Bible says you have the Holy Spirit in you. And the Holy Spirit's job is to come and to guide us, to enlighten us, to give us a sense of what is right and what is wrong, what is truth and what is false, what is sin and what is righteousness. And that Spirit of God being at work in us, guiding us by His grace, changing us, means that we're frequently, and maybe even more frequently as we grow, coming across these situations where what we want to do is at odds with our convictions about what we should do. And we find as we grow that our lives as Christians aren't just about navigating around all the bad stuff. It's not just, oh, just make sure I don't go to the strip club here and don't rip off my customers here and kind of hopscotch through life around the evil stuff. Because we find there's a whole other side of it. James, and it's a verse, if you're going to memorize a verse this week, and maybe that's not practice, I would say this is one to memorize, James 4:17. If anyone knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, that's sin for them. It opens up this whole other side that it's not just about going through life avoiding all the evil stuff, that we actually have an onus on us to live by our convictions, to stand up for what we believe is right and true, to speak what is true. And what a man like Caleb demonstrates, this element of a legacy worth leaving, is one of having the courage to live by the conviction that is at work in your heart, knowing what's right and doing it, knowing what's right and saying it. And sometimes that means going against the current. Sometimes that means sitting alone when everybody else goes off and does something. Maybe it means standing alone when it's unpopular. But for Caleb, he looked at the problems that were ahead of him, and he didn't minimize them. He didn't say this is going to be difficult, but not that difficult because they're really not that bad. He knew they were gigantic people. They lived in large fortified cities. But instead of magnifying the problems, he magnified God and God's power. That was the difference between him and the other spies. He minimized the problems in light of having magnified the power of God, and he trusted in God to be able to deliver on his promises. And so this following the Lord wholeheartedly involves listening to our convictions and living by them, even when they're small, even when they seem insignificant, And it's not small and insignificant when all those things add up and you end up at the end of your life being known as a person of conviction and of integrity and a man or a woman of principle. Caleb goes on and says to Joshua, on that day, this is verse 9 if you're following along, on that day Moses swore to me, that land which your feet have walked on will be your inheritance, and your children will inherit it because you followed the Lord my God wholeheartedly. And he goes on and says, now then, just as the Lord promised, he has kept me alive for 45 years since the time he said this to Moses while Israel was moving about in the wilderness. And so here I am today, 85 years old. What does he say? I'm still as strong today as I was the day Moses sent me out. I'm still as vigorous to go out and battle now as I was on that day. So give me this country that God promised to me on that day, because you yourself heard that the Anakites were there and their cities were large and fortified, but the Lord helping me, I will drive them out, just like God said I would. And so he has this conviction that he stands by, and that other element, if you're looking for something worth imitating in your life, is this trust that he has in God. That with the Lord helping me, I can do what he's asked me to do, what he's called me to do, what he's prepared for me to do. And you think, where did this trust come from? I mean, it was 45 years. 45 years since God made this promise until he's giving this speech to Joshua saying, now is the time, give me this land. But he looks back, and over these last decades of wandering in the wilderness and of battles against enemies, God has kept him alive. And as he recalls God's presence, he says, you know what? God was with me when he delivered us from Egypt. He was with our people. God was with me as I was a spy to give me protection. God was with me when I spoke up to the Israelites that with courage and conviction. God has now kept me alive for this 45 years. He has given strength and passion to press forward based on what God has done in the past. And he wasn't asking just for a nice little patch of ground to retire on. He wasn't like, hey, Joshua, you know, can you rustle up some white sneakers and a little chain for my glasses for when I'm playing canasta and backgammon down in a gated community in Florida? He was talking about going to war so that he could drive off those who were on the land that God had promised to him and his descendants. He wasn't asking for an easy path, but he knew based on God's power shown in the past that he could have hope and trust in God the same in that day. And your situation, my situation, we're all facing different stuff. I mean, it's funny that we come together. What else would bring people of different ages and life stages and stuff together in the way that a pursuit of faithfulness to God does? But we've got such different situations, such different circumstances, all of us. And yet our God is the same. And his power is the same. And the strength that he used to deliver you from some sin or some bondage or some lie in the past, that's the same strength he has for you today. And reaching back further than that, the strength that he used to part the Red Sea, that's the strength that he has for you today, to walk in the ways that he has set out for you. I mean, the courage that he gave you in the past, that maybe that first time when you stood up and said, I will be a follower of Jesus, although I know that isn't all that cool sometimes and maybe costly to me. That courage that you had to make that declaration, maybe on the first day that you committed professed your faith in Christ, maybe the day you stood up and were baptized. I mean, there's these challenging moments, and the courage that he gave you that day is the same courage that he can give you today. But the thing is, the memory of God's faithfulness in the past is what we can draw on as we stand up against difficult things ahead. But there's a secret to it, is that those memories don't have to be yours. I mean, is there somebody that you know who God has brought healing to, brought freedom to? Is there somebody that you know who God has restored the joy of? Is there a story in the Bible where you long to see God act in the same way for you? I mean, it's the same God behind all of it. And so the power is no less available to you. You can trust in him and his power based on what he's done for you and what he's done for the people around you and what he's done through history. I mean, he continues to act the same yesterday, today, and forever. And so we can depend on him the same. And for Caleb, this task was difficult. He stood there strong in his convictions with a task that was to fight people who were strong against cities that were fortified. But for him, he didn't say, God has said this is mine, and his plan is good, and he's good on his word, so because I'm great, I'll take it over. Because I'm powerful, I'll take it over. Because I'm vigorous and passionate, I'll take it over. No, no, no. What does he say? His words are, but with the Lord helping me, I will drive them out, just like he said. I'm not sure what God says to you week in and week out. I'm guessing he probably doesn't say, go and take that land. Just drive your neighbor off his land. Expand your territory. I'm guessing he probably doesn't say that to you. But it's very reasonable to expect that God is saying the same thing to us that's consistently written in his word, that if you know the good you ought to do, you should do it. That you can be certain God would say to you. And so what conviction is God asking you to live out, to live by? I went for a walk around the school this morning, and God was gracious in speaking to me about this idea that maybe when you think about this, you think, but I can't live by my convictions. I can't. I can't walk forward trusting God because what lies ahead would be too costly, would be too difficult. I just can't. And God reminded me that if your narrative, that story in your head is, I can't, I can't, I can't, I can't, you probably won't. But if the story is changed and is about how he can, through you, then you got a fighting chance. Maybe the conviction that God is calling you to is something small that doesn't seem like it matters that much. I remember I had been a Christian for just a couple of years, and God asked me, and I don't even know if all the young people are going to know this, but God asked me to delete Napster. I don't know, maybe some are too old and some are too young. Does anybody know Napster? Couple? Couple. Okay, so like three of us are in this range. So this Napster was how you downloaded music illegally, like the real pioneer of downloading media illegally. This was the way to go. And then Metallica got all mad at Napster and everything blew up. But I still had Napster, and then after Napster was gone, you could download it from Kazam or something else. I mean, there was a couple of programs, but then this one day in Bible college, I don't remember what the situation was, but I remember God saying, you have to get rid of that. And I had lived for years, years and years and years, knowing that this isn't right. My conviction was, this isn't right that I steal this media, but it wasn't wrong enough that I should change. It wasn't wrong enough that I should do anything about it. It didn't hurt anybody. I can't even say how good it was for my relationship with Jesus to delete Napster. Because it was small. And I wasn't going to prison over this. It wasn't going to affect anybody. But it was a conviction God put in my heart, asked me to live out. And when I did it, though it seemed so small, it was so incredibly freeing. And so I ask, what is it for you? What's a conviction that God would put on your heart, a way that you ought to live in obedience to him that just doesn't line up with the way you're living right now? Maybe it's a big thing, like getting right with God in a larger sense. Saying, I know, I believe what I hear about Jesus being a Lord and Savior. That I need to walk in that. I need to stand up and be counted as a follower of Jesus, even though I struggle with some of what Christians believe and do and have said through history. Maybe it's to say, you know, I got to get baptized as an example of this today. Today is the day. I mean, maybe it's something that's a little bit smaller, just changing some insurance paperwork or updating a profile to make sure that it reflects what's true about the location you live in. I mean, there's these things, and we have to be careful not to say my conviction is your conviction. Now, there is truth. There is right and wrong. And it's important for us to walk with each other in that, but to be totally fair and far more real with the way life actually unfolds, not everything that God asks me to do today will be the same thing that he asks you. Not everything that God asks you to do today will be what he demands of me. And that doesn't mean that truth is relative and shaky, but God is aware of where we are in life and what he's calling us to. God's well aware of us as individuals, and so, yes, we push one another towards godliness, but we also be gracious with one another at the same time, recognizing that not everything God has said to you is the same for me to work on and change or grow in today. But I encourage you to let today be a day, if something rattles around your mind when we talk about conviction, to be a day that you trust in God with whatever following through on that conviction might mean for you. And it's a wide scale. It goes from, you know, confessing crimes from the past to little things that nobody will ever know that you did. But God is faithful and speaks to us. And legacies, they're not left by people who knew what was right and failed to do it. Not good legacies, anyway. Good legacies are left by people who know what's right by the power and grace of God at work in their lives and then trust him for the ability to live that out. Then Joshua said to Caleb, I give you this land. I bless you. And Hebron then has belonged. That land has belonged to Caleb and his family ever since, because the Lord was the one that he followed wholeheartedly. I mean, he followed the Lord wholeheartedly. If you want a one-liner that's good for a tombstone, that's one to strive for. That's a beauty. Because when you think about that hyphen, what does your hyphen say up until this point? Does your hyphen, if you were to summarize it, or the people around you were to summarize it, does it say what you'd want it to say? And if it doesn't, don't be discouraged. Start living differently. Grow. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Recognize that we are all on process, on a journey of growth together that happens slow, happens fast, has valleys and peaks. But if your life isn't what you want it to be, if the legacy isn't what you want it to be, well, identify what you want it to be and start living like that.